Let's go up to our ring announcer.
The following podcast is scheduled for one episode and is our vantage point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Wrestling fans, and welcome back to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. This is episode number 43 on Monday, August 7th, 2017. I, of course, am Joe Murata, alongside the one and only Michael Quinn. How you doing today, Quinn?
Howdy diddy.
Welcome to August, my friend.
Wow, August already.
Summer's flying on by, man.
I can't believe it. It's almost SummerSlam.
It's almost SummerSlam. It's almost Scott Keith time. He'll be joining us. That'll be nice.
I feel like I've been saying it's almost SummerSlam, like, all summer.
Well, it is almost SummerSlam. It's always almost SummerSlam in the summer.
Well, the day after SummerSlam, it's almost SummerSlam.
It's almost SummerSlam. Folks, thank you as always for joining us. We are proud and happy to talk to you about the world of retro wrestling. Glad to be back with you for another week. We've got some great topics for you. I know that because I get to kick off the show. But before we get to any of that, I just want to remind you of the usual suspects here. You can reach us on Twitter at OVP Podcasts, and there you can kind of tweet stuff at us or maybe send us funny GIFs.
Yeah, the GIFs or GIFs.
Yeah, the GIFs.
You can contact us that way.
We like that.
Yeah, we like it.
Fun times.
Yeah.
And of course, you can email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. We do get the emails, Quinn.
Yeah, we do read them. I try to respond.
Yep.
Although the last one I responded to, I had a big long thing, and I put all these links to YouTube videos so someone could see it, and it didn't seem like that was their email anymore.
Yeah, what was that about? I saw that come back.
Yeah, I was so sad because I got him all these cool links to DVDs or whatever.
Was that some kind of prank?
I don't know. It seemed legit,
yeah,
but
it
didn't seem fake or anything.
Well, folks, if you have a legitimate email, please feel free to email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, we have a Facebook group, and it's a really great time with our community and our fans.
Yeah, you can go on there. If you search Our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast, you'll see the Facebook group, not to be mixed up with the Facebook page.
Right.
If you click on that, there'll be a join button, and you can join. We'll approve you, and you can talk about the old wrestling.
Old wrestling. I went on a bit of a spree recently.
Did you know?
Just throwing out random one-liners and fake wrestler quotes and stuff. So you might get that kind of stuff. Sometimes our fans post some really funny suggestions and topics and things like that. You know, speaking of the suggestions, we get a lot of them. We got so many, actually, that we decided to make a spreadsheet, Quinn.
Yes, there's a spreadsheet now. And actually, it's on the OVP.com website. I recently webmastered it up, and there's, if you look on the top bar of the site, or if you're on the mobile version, if you click menu, you'll see suggestions, and that will lead you to the spreadsheet where you can edit it.
Exactly. And I think that's working out very well, actually.
It is. Better than expected.
Better than expected. So we have that, and you can obviously, you know, find us on various platforms besides SoundCloud. Quinn, what are some of those these days?
Well, there's Apple Music or iTunes.
Yep.
And over there, you can subscribe.
Yep, you sure can.
You can leave a review, and you can do that, and the podcast will end up in your little pod thing. And you can also help other fans find the podcast through the review part.
Yes. And where else are we besides that, Quinn?
We're on Google Play Music, Stitcher,
yep,
Blueberry, Auto FM player.
Who cares?
Whoa!
Yes. Yeah.
There it is.
And other various places.
Yes.
Too many to count at this point.
Too many to count, but one that does count, of course, would be theplacetobenation.com.
Yes.
If you're not listening to us on there, why don't you head on over there and listen to us again? Because there's some great podcasts on there. We happen to be one of them. There's the Place to Be podcast. Quinn's a fan of that. You know, the Mother Thip.
The gold standard.
The gold standard.
As they call it.
And of course, we got to shout out our friend, our little brother, Petey Winson.
Yeah, Petey.
He does a great show that's on their Pro Wrestling Only feed, and it's called Greetings from Allentown, as he says.
That's a big name for a little name like Petey.
But it's a great show, Quinn. I know you really like it.
I like it. Yeah, they talk in review, or he does, not
yes,
they.
One-man show.
Yeah, one-man show. He reviews old shows like we do,
yes,
kind of. But he's even more, well, we're both kind of random, I guess, but
He seems more random, though.
You think?
I think Petey's a little more random.
We'll have to have a random contest.
I'll start calling him Random Petey.
Random Petey.
But anyway, check him out, GF Allentown. And also, Quinn, last Monday, we were special guests on another great podcast, the Wrestling Podcast About Nothing.
The WPAN.
The WPAN. So why don't you check those guys out, too? It's Mike Crockett and the Kingpin, Brian Malonis.
Yes. We had a lot of fun doing that.
We did have a lot of fun talking about the merch.
Yeah, that was super fun.
That was a lot of fun. So thank you guys for that. All right, Quinn, I think we've got all the plugs out of the way. I think it's time to start the show.
I think so.
So we are kicking off, of course, with Why Did They Bother? And that's our Season 5 format. And just to recap what that is, each week, Quinn and I will alternate presenting something to each other and you, the fans, where we're wondering, why did they bother with this? And they, meaning a promotion, maybe a wrestler, a gimmick, anything like that,
yeah.
Right? Well, this is actually a request, but I think both of us had already thought of this one. It is from Filippo Festuccia. It's a hard name to say. Ooh. And he wants us to talk about why did they bother with the ECW in WWE?
No.
Yeah, I don't know why they bothered, but I guess we'll dig into it.
we'll dig into it.
Wasn't very good.
Now, folks, you've heard us talk, of course, about Extreme Championship Wrestling, and we both like it, and it has its flaws, obviously, but it was a bit of a maverick promotion, a bit of a revolutionary promotion from 92, 93 up until 2001 when it closed, and at the helm was Paul Heyman, Quinn.
One of the best of all time.
A visionary.
One of the best bookers of all time.
Yep.
Great promotion all around, if you ask me. It hit its lows, but that was due to stress on Paul's part.
Correct.
And not, he was running everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it's a one-man show here.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you expect?
And some of the things that made ECW so different and so unique was the overall gritty and dark atmosphere and attitude about the way it was produced. It was very realistic.
It was
for wrestling.
It was more raw than raw.
It was more raw than raw is a very good way to put it. It was a rejection of the cartoony, larger-than-life style that WWF was imploring at the time, and WCW, because they were emulating.
This ain't WCW! This ain't Monday Night Raw! This ain't SmackDown! This ain't even WWE! This, my friends, is ECW!
They turned the fact that they had low production values into a style.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always one of the things ECW, I think, definitely gets seen as. It's an atmosphere. You're in these gritty arenas, but the fans are just all into it. And it's
dedicated.
Just great promotion all around.
Amongst one of the most loyal fan bases, I'd say, of any promotion ever.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Eclipsing ROH and TNA and all those guys.
Yep.
But
big but.
That promotion closed its doors in early 2001, and Paul Heyman showed up on WWF television. We all know that.
Very shortly after.
We're live here in D.C. I'm Jim Ross, and they already know who you are, so tell them who I am now. I'm joined by Paul Heyman.
You're joined by Paul Heyman.
WWE, I should say, acquired the rights to ECW and its video library in 2003.
Yes.
They didn't do too much with it. They put out a DVD, a great DVD set.
That was the start of it. And it sold well.
In 2005, and it sold very well.
Joe, I would say, I think that's probably why they bothered.
Yes. That's reason number one, right?
Yeah.
Is because ECW had something of a revolution in 2005. Not only the DVD, Quinn, but a fantastic pay-per-view backed by WWE called One Night Stand.
Welcome to ECW One Night Stand!
And that show.
Fantastic show, folks.
One of the best pay-per-views post the Attitude Era.
Absolutely.
I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
From the WWE.
Hammerstein Ballroom, Joey Styles on commentary.
It's a fantastic Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka match on it.
Great match. That was a reunion done right, so I don't blame them for giving it another crack the next year, if you recall.
Yes, they did, and they tried. And this is where they tried to integrate ECW into the kayfabe of the WWE.
And that was the first warning shot. However, there was something very notable there, and that was Rob Van Dam defeating Super Cena,
yes,
for the ECW
WWE title.
WWE title with the help of Edge.
It's Edge. Cover. What the hell?
I guess. All right.
That period of time, however, is where Vince decided, well, this is going so well.
Yeah.
We're going to make ECW our brand.
Right. So they at that point, they had two brands, as they like to call them, Raw and SmackDown, which, you know, it's back to that today. But I know if you haven't been watching in the last year or two,
it wasn't always. They
had gone away with that. So they were back doing, you know, the Raw and SmackDown brand. And they said, why don't we have a third one? And it'll be ECW because, holy shit, it's so successful.
Yep. So you can't blame them for giving it a shot. And for the first couple of months, it was done differently than Raw and SmackDown. If you recall, camera angles were different. It had a little tiny bit of an ECW look to it.
Now, this was due to two things.
Yes.
Paul was at the helm, and Vince had, I've heard, promised that he would not interfere. He'd let, basically, here's the money, Paul. Yep. You don't have to worry about the money or the business anymore, and just do what you were doing at ECW.
Right.
That was supposed to be the deal, right?
Right, just recreate your ECW magic.
Right.
And I'll leave you alone.
This is the second factor about that whole why it looked different thing, is when WWE got the TV deal to where to place ECW, right?
Mm-hmm.
They settled on Sci-Fi Network.
Yes.
Who was under the NBC umbrella.
Yep, NBC Universal.
So WWE had an existing partnership with that company. So Sci-Fi was kind of the only place they could put another program on.
Correct.
And Sci-Fi previously didn't have any wrestling.
No.
Yeah.
No one watched Sci-Fi.
Right. Exactly. But my point is this Sci-Fi-ness, the network initially wanted to inject Sci-Fi elements into ECW, which sounds really freaking weird.
Yes.
But so you have Paul on the one hand, he can do whatever he wants,
but
he has this caveat of because of the network, which is what he tried to escape in the first place.
With TNN.
When TNN was, you know, in the past for ECW, it had put network restrictions. So right from the get-go, Paul's walking into a situation where the Sci-Fi network is making him put characters on it, like the Zombie and things like that.
The Zombie, or even the Boogeyman was actually because of that.
And even that Kevin Thorne guy.
The Vampire.
The Vampire with the girl that was a vampire, too.
Yeah.
I don't even remember her name. No Elvira or whatever.
No one does. Elvira.
That's not my name. That's not my name.
So that was kind of not so good. And basically in 2007, not long after this thing launched, it kind of became another WWE-ified program.
Yeah, well, the big breaking point for the program was the first ECW pay-per-view. Not One Night Stand,
right,
but the December to Dismember pay-per-view.
Awful.
Now this comes along and they're gonna say, listen, ECW is gonna have pay-per-views now too. It's not gonna be as frequent, but here we go, right?
Yep.
And the champion, I believe, was Rob Van Dam still at that point in late 2006.
Okay.
I could be mistaken.
Yeah, but it sounds about right.
But all you really need to know is that Vince, who was pushing Bobby Lashley at the time, sent him over to ECW, and the idea was that Paul would get Bobby Lashley over, and he basically told Paul that night, you know, Lashley, you're going to put Lashley over whoever the champion was. I'm almost positive it was RVD.
It doesn't really
matter.
No.
The point is Lashley was going over an ECW guy.
Correct, yep.
And Paul quit the WWE over it.
And I don't blame him.
Yes.
Because, A, not only was Bobby Lashley at that time, I know he is vastly improved, but that was over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
An unproven commodity.
He was green. He was very green.
Green and couldn't talk.
Let's look at the hype man. Let the hype man do it.
And is just not a character that you could build around in Paul Heyman's version of an ECW, let alone the WWE in general.
He was too green for that situation.
Correct. Not that Paul can't work with crap. He can.
Right, but Paul likes to, you know, build them up from the bottom and make them his characters. Lashley was already, even though he was green, he was established as a big smiley baby face who shaved Donald Trump's head and all this crap.
He was Vince's boy.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, one of the few, because we can't talk about every single detail of this, obviously.
Right.
One of the few funny things, and this should say a lot about how great this promotion was, this brand was, that I really liked about it, is when Vince McMahon won the ECW World Heavyweight title, I believe from Bobby Lashley with help from Umaga or something like that.
Yes, it was. This was part of the attempt to make Bobby Lashley have to compete against Vince, just like Austin. It's just going to be like Austin, right?
Ugh.
Here we go!
This is it!
Vince McMahon on top!
Oh, he got him! He got him!
I can't believe this!
But Vince ends up winning the title, and this is my favorite version of Vince as well.
Yeah.
The do-rag wearing.
Yep.
Because he had just had his head shaved because it was all involved in the Trump thing.
Yep.
And, like, he wears a do-rag, and he's hardcore Vince McMahon.
So funny.
And he was really good.
He was fun.
And that made ECW fun for a little bit, was watching Vince, he would strut around
yep.
and wear the do-rag and wrestle like he was hardcore.
Sure.
What's up, Holmes? Peace out. The champ is here.
And it was great. And my favorite is when he wore the suit and
yes,
the do-rag.
And the do-rag.
And the title around his waist while wearing a suit.
Yeah, it was
great. He looked
great.
Like an idiot.
It was so stupid that it was funny. But here's the problem. And this is why it was so far off from the original,
yeah.
you know, morals of ECW, whatever you want to call it, is even though they brought in guys like Sandman and his old ass, right? And
yeah.
they brought in Tommy Dreamer.
Which, they were old, but they weren't. They could still, like, at least establish it.
And they were
like,
still names,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they were still names.
2006,
yeah.
2007. And
Tommy Dreamer.
Sabu.
Yeah.
Right? They brought in these guys. They also tried to inject these new guys. Like, wasn't CM Punk in ECW?
Well, I was going to say. So, CM Punk was the big prize.
Right.
He's the guy Paul wanted.
Yes.
Paul was going to center the thing around him. I've heard him say this.
And I don't blame him. That's good.
The idea was Punk was going to be the guy that Paul started from scratch with
mm-hmm.
and brought him to the top.
Okay.
But Paul was out before that could happen. And I think eventually Punk became the ECW champion.
He was.
But, you know, it didn't happen the way. And it to me, it delayed Punk's prominence, too.
I agree. It was almost a waste of his time. To me, this ECW relaunch reminded me of being a kid and only having a limited number of action figures to reenact your wrestling with.
Yeah.
It was like they were able to get Sandman, yeah, and Sabu.
And CM Punk.
And CM Punk and a couple of token old ECW guys, but they mixed into it, you know, Kevin Thorne.
Right.
And Elijah Burke.
Yes. Oh, God.
A bunch
Elijah
of
Burke,
guys
yeah.
like that. And not only that, I could swear, and I don't feel like looking this up, wasn't Jack Swagger the ECW champion at one point?
Yes.
Why?
I don't know. Actually, hold on. Was he? I know
yeah.
Mark Henry was.
Yeah, and that was
like,
the thing.
I know, Christian.
Big Show, I think.
Well, Big Show was like the second champ. Okay, that's what. Yeah, Big Show was a champion,
Why?
Too.
Why?
Well, because Paul liked him a lot.
But here's the thing.
Paul was behind the Big Show thing.
I don't care. See, as a fan, that makes no sense to me. Why are we taking a brand that's supposed to be crafted by Paul Heyman and just dragging guys from WWE into it?
Well, think about the Big Show. This might be. And
I'd rather not.
But think about Paul.
Okay.
What was one of his signature things?
911. But 911 wasn't the
yeah.
champion.
No,
he wasn't the star of the
you
company.
Know, I think Paul had a soft spot for having a big, overbearing champion. Like, that's what he tried to build Rhino to be.
And Rhino was talented.
Yeah, like
Rhino was good.
To me, that's a Paulism was the Big Show stuff.
Sure. Ultimately, the fate to wrap up here of this is it kind of became just another WWE brand that happened to
yeah.
use the letters ECW.
Yeah. By the end of it, it was Christian was the champion forever.
Yeah.
I want to say Matt Hardy was ECW
he
champion.
Was.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a manufactured extreme, which
yeah.
fans hate.
Yes. And this is the wrong property to make manufactured that way. Because
yes.
the whole point of it was that it was organic.
Correct.
Which leads us back to why did they bother, really?
Exactly.
I mean, like, why would you bother if it can't exist organically within the WWE
mm-hmm.
ecosystem. It's
right.
impossible.
Right. They should have just called it OVW because that was their developmental at the time and had it be that. In fact, it became it. NXT, the game show version,
but inherited the time slot.
That time slot.
It wasn't the same wrestlers
Correct.
Or anything.
But that was the ultimate fate as in early 2010.
Yeah.
They had enough of this third brand here. And they used to treat it like it was the ECW world title mattered and stuff, you know?
Yeah, they wanted it to be equal.
But it never was.
But I think that also was more because they also wanted the SmackDown title to be equal.
Probably.
So they you know, by default, ECW title has to be equal as well.
So I'm going to pose this question to you, Quinn, to close out. And again, folks, if you have memories of this, feel free to share them with us. We intentionally are just giving an overview here.
Yeah.
We're not doing an hour
yeah.
on this. But the overall feeling that I have is that it was a promising concept that only lasted a couple of months. And I want to pose this question to you, Quinn, about whether or not they should have bothered with the branding. Do you think if they would have just had a third show, had some more experimental characters like they did, and did a lot of the same things, bring in some veterans and maybe try to make it a third brand, but had nothing to do with the ECW branding, do you think it would have been more successful?
No.
You really don't?
I at that time, no.
So do you think this was the best thing they could have done if they wanted to add a third brand?
I do, because okay. They had the ECW name recognition.
Fair enough.
I think ultimately what sunk the thing was injecting the WWE anti-ECW characters.
Right.
And because it didn't have enough time to foster, to the new audience that had not seen ECW, it didn't have enough time to settle, like, this is ECW.
That's a good point.
Honestly, and without Paul at the helm, the brand was dead in the water.
You're right.
And everyone knew that.
You're right. I mean,
without Paul, it's nothing.
6 months later, Vince was the champion. That should tell you something.
Exactly.
And I think, as always, you know, it's very fitting that whenever Vince brings in something that used to compete against him, we talked about NWA last week, he always gets his grubby hands all over it and turns it into something where, as always, Vince is victorious.
Yeah, and even, I think, to be fair to Vince here, he had the best of intentions. But
for a few months, yes.
Him and Paul was like oil and vinegar.
I agree.
And it wasn't going to mesh.
No, it wasn't going to mesh. You're
and
right.
And they did try. I will give them credit. Paul wanted to do it. Vince wanted to do it. And, you know, once they... Bobby Lashley is where they butted heads, basically. Essentially.
Yeah, no, you're right. Well, folks, speaking of butt heads, we will be back right after this.
Whoa, what the hell is this? Wait a minute, Joe. What is it?
Ladies and gentlemen, the following contest is scheduled for one fall. Introducing first, the zombie.
A zombie? What is a rib? What is this?
I can assure everyone watching the world premiere of ECW on Sci-Fi, the zombie is, well, not an offering of ECW or Sci-Fi.
The zombie? Hey, look, I spend a lot of time in ECW. What the hell is this? I've never saw no zombie. He's an ugly looking SOB, and I think he's the new breed unleashed, that's for sure. That's riveting right there.
Race to Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair to The Rock, Sting to Steve Austin. You're listening to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Thanks for being with us for episode number 43, Monday, August 7th, 2017. Quinn, it is time for Mount Rushmore and Death Valley, where each week we will put four of the best of something onto Mount Rushmore, and four of the worst go down into the desert of Death Valley. Quinn, you've got the pick this week. Where are we talking?
Well, this was another suggestion by Gary Fay on our boards, and you can leave suggestions on the OVP suggestion Excel spreadsheet. Suggestion box, I guess. He had a good one. I thought about this one for like a week now, and I thought this was a really, really good one. So this week's Mount Rushmore in Death Valley is pushes.
Pushes. All right, Quinn, what's a push?
A push, in by definition for this, is going, it's not like a heel turn or a face turn of an established character.
Okay.
It is a push, literally what it is. It, you're being pushed up.
Okay.
So for example, you're a jobber, right?
Yep.
And they're pushing you to be mid-carder. Or you're a mid-carder and they're pushing you to be a main eventer, like an elevation, an actual like elevation promotion within the story, kayfabe, whatever.
Okay, and what would determine a good push versus a bad push?
Like a good push actually turns out where the person, they don't need to be pushed any longer. They are actually established. Whereas a bad push is you pushed them and they didn't become established. They failed, they tanked, okay. Whatever. It didn't work out.
Perfect. And you had the pick, so I have the stick, right?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to give you one that I think is a great push that comes to mind, and it's in WCW, and that would be the push of Bill Goldberg from nobody
yes.
to world champion.
That is a great example to start with. Bill Goldberg, the way they brought him in, literally, you thought he was the jobber to another guy.
Right.
Like, I believe it's Hugh Morris, although I argue in my own brain kayfabe that he fought someone on Saturday night and, like, beat him, but...
He didn't.
Regardless.
It was Hugh Morris.
It was Hugh Morris, and Hugh Morris was, you know, he was a guy looking for a push, almost.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
He was
so
a mid-carder.
You just thought he was coming to fight this guy, beat him on Nitro, and that would be the end of it, right?
Yeah, but oh, no, no.
Muscles him over! Combination slam!
Goldberg just comes in there and beats him in 2 seconds.
It was awesome.
And you're like, what?
Yeah.
It was very surprising.
Very.
And even the announcers were acting a bit stunned, like, whoa, this up-and-comer guy, this Bill Goldberg, we've never heard of him. He just beat Hugh Morris. That's pretty crazy.
Yep. Gene tried to interview him on the ramp, didn't say a word, barely talked. And before you know it, the guy's got an undefeated streak. He's then the U.S. champion. Then he beats Hulk Hogan July of 98.
I mean, talk about the prototypical successful push.
Yes.
Not only... did he go on this streak?
Mm-hmm.
Not only did he win a mid-card title in the process, so he goes to mid-card, but all within the same push, he goes to main eventer and household name, I would say.
Absolutely. I mean, rivaling only the likes of DX and Austin
in that
in terms
time.
Of popularity. Absolutely.
And that match where he beat Hulk Hogan, it's the most viewed Nitro ever of all time, if I recall.
Huge ratings win for Nitro.
In the Georgia Dome.
In the Georgia Dome.
I mean, the Georgia Dome is big. This place was sold out.
40-something thousand, I think.
40-something thousand within a week.
It was
of announcing it.
It was a great, great push. And regardless of how Goldberg lost, the push worked.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the most successful pushes ever. To me, it's the reason that they were still able to bring Goldberg this year at WrestleMania.
Exactly.
I mean, like, people still remember that.
That 1 year of 1998, you know, late 97 to late 98.
Yeah.
That was the push, and it worked.
And I think it's hard to look back for people who weren't there for it and understand it. And it was like a snowball effect. It was unbelievable at the time. It'd be like if some jobber came in today mm-hmm. and beat a mid-carder, and within 6 months he was beating Cena,
right?
Nakamura,
sure.
Nakamura, Roman Reigns,
yeah.
And all these guys, all in the matter of you know, 6 months. What was it?
Yeah, it was
maybe
great.
Eight
it
months?
Was 6 to 8 months. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be my pick. But usually we volley. Do you want to throw one at me?
This one's also a quick one, and I think it's the most obvious one of all of them.
Okay,
Hulk Hogan, the push from when he not originally entered, his second run in the WWF.
84.
From guy that we knew as a weird heel in this promotion.
Right.
Who fought Andre the Giant and was just kind of a big, not fat, but, you know, like almost in that vein of big fat
just
heel.
Just a big heel, yeah.
Big heel. Comes into the WWF and within a month is the world champion.
Yeah, well, his return was when he saved Backlund from the Samoans, right?
Right.
Earlier in January of 84.
Right.
And by January 23rd, you know, that famous day, he's in Madison Square Garden and beats the Sheik in about 5 minutes
yes.
for the world title.
Sheik going up. Hulk Hogan, he drops the big leg on him. He's down for the cover of the leg. 1, 2. He got him.
So this is a push from kind of, I mean, I understand that within the territories, and he was in the movie and everything, but not in wrestling had he been treated like this before, let's
no.
put it that way.
And even AWA, try as they might, or maybe despite themselves, you know, he wasn't quite the star that Vince immediately turned him into.
Right. Vince saw that he could be that. And the power of this push is in the fact that I was saying household name of Goldberg before,
yeah,
but Hulk Hogan is like a next level thing after this. Like
the household name
the
of wrestling.
The face of professional wrestling as a whole.
Yes.
That's a push.
That was...
that is a freaking push.
I have to agree with you. Hogan's run from January of 84 winning the title.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the whole run is the push, but
that started in January of 84, and really, he wasn't quote-unquote de-pushed for a long time.
I would say the push, if you want to talk just the push itself,
yeah.
I want to say the push is when he comes in, main eventer, but the real, like, over-the-top, the finale of the push is probably against Andre at WrestleMania 3. That's the grand... Like, now he's, like...
He doesn't need to be pushed anymore.
He doesn't need
Correct.
A push anymore.
I say that's right on the money, Quinn, because right. from that moment on, the body slam of Andre, which killed him, and then, remember, yeah. Andre died a few
years
later. Yeah,
he died, according to Hogan, yes.
It's really sad.
I wrestled Andre the Giant with these boots on, and then a couple days later, he passed on.
And pinning him, you know, defeating the supposedly undefeated Andre the Giant, that was it. Push successful.
Right.
93 or 78, if you need to be Dave Meltzer, 1,000 people, you know, saw that, right?
And they wanted to see it. They came to see Hulk Hogan.
And not only that, they were able to ride that match to primetime television in February of the following year.
Yes, but the push was no longer there.
No, but it didn't need to be.
No.
He was officially Hulk Hogan
right.
Point forward.
He didn't even need the title anymore. That's how effective the push was.
Absolutely. So I think we've got an interesting situation here, Michael, because mm-hmm. Goldberg and Hogan, I think, can't get knocked off of this.
Yeah, it's also interesting to think that Goldberg's push is peaks at beating Hogan.
That's very, very poetic.
Yes.
I don't think either of them can get knocked off of this, and I have... no real reservations about doing a double selection to start if you're okay with it.
Hogan and Goldberg, I mean, do you want to throw... Because I think there might be a lot of good pushes. That's the only thing.
Okay, we have to put Hogan on.
I think Hogan's bigger than Goldberg.
If that's the case, it's
going to be hard to match Goldberg. So I think we could put one in.
Let's put Hogan on then.
Goldberg could very well be in. I just don't want to throw two because I think there's a lot of good pushes.
Okay, no problem. So let's go with Hulk Hogan's WWF push.
Yes.
For number one. All right, Michael, I got another one for you.
Sure.
And it's another WCW one.
Okay.
Diamond Dallas Page in 96.
Diamond Dallas, very good push.
Went from a mid-carder who no one, and he was already old. He was like 40, and no one cared, really. It was like, okay, he's decent, he's fun, you know what I mean? It was mm-hmm. that Johnny B. Badd feud that was the first notable thing he really did. He rode that to coming back, saying no to the NWO, and before you know it, he's feuding with Randy Savage, and he's in the mid-card.
Yeah, if you recall, he had the silent benefactor after he was bankrupted by Johnny B. Badd.
That's right, yeah.
It brought him back, and that's, to me, where the push starts. His trunks, his look, everything changes.
The Diamond Cutter?
Yes, the Diamond Cutter comes into effect, and he is just, he rode it on that Diamond Cutter, if you ask me.
Absolutely.
The idea was that you paid to see DDP somehow hit the Diamond Cutter in some weird way that you weren't expecting. Even though you were expecting the Diamond Cutter,
mm-hmm.
you didn't know where it was going to come from.
Absolutely. That was the RKO before the RKO had that, you know, mentality. And DDP, you know, had a great mid-card run. He was almost pushed from no Carter, you know what I mean, from 94-95. Great upper mid-card run in 96 and 97. And then he's in the world title scene at points in 98 and 99.
It was eclipsed. That push, his from nothing to mid-card push was very much eclipsed by his from mid-carder to main event push.
And Randy Savage had a lot to do with that.
Yes.
He also feuded with Goldberg, if you recall.
I think just the work with Hall and Nash refusing them. That whole
Fantastic.
Angle, that helped DDP. That set him apart. It's like, this guy isn't going to be a stooge mm-hmm. for the NWO like a lot of the guys at the time.
Right, exactly. And here's why I think this is one of the best pushes ever. Specifically because it took who had been a non-wrestler up until the early 90s, a manager, a talker, and old for wrestling standards, 40 years old when he got this push, right?
Probably where you should be at your peak.
Right, exactly, and maybe on the downturn after that, right?
Exactly.
It turned him into another household name for WCW.
For a couple years, too.
For a few years, he had a great run, so much so that Vince, you know, was willing to pick him up. He did dick with him. I mean, it was terrible that Vince took him in.
I mean, to be fair, I think it wasn't right what happened, but at the same time, you have to see what Vince is looking at, and he was like 45, 46 at
Absolutely.
That point.
Absolutely.
Like, so, what are you going to do with this guy?
Totally agree, but I don't know the DDP's push beats Goldberg still.
No, it doesn't.
Okay. So do you have another one we can throw out there, see what we're doing here?
I actually have one, and you got to think long-term with this one, right?
Okay.
And it is based off a heel turn, but it's because it's really his push.
Okay.
Because I'm thinking of Chris Jericho in WCW. And let me make my case.
Sure, go ahead.
Chris Jericho came in as a big smiley baby face, right?
Yes, he did. The Lionheart.
Perennial, I guess, like, lower mid-carder.
He was like 93 Tito Santana.
You know,
honestly.
Yeah, like, kind of, you know, he was there and people liked him, but it wasn't like anything. But
I agree.
When he makes the heel turn, to me, that's his true push.
Yes, in 97.
And he becomes a smart aleck, and he starts winning. He couldn't be beaten for a long time.
It's true.
It led to a great feud with Dean Malenko.
You're a disgrace to your family, Malenko. You're a failure. You could never wrestle. Your brother sure can't wrestle, and your father certainly can't wrestle. And you call your mediocre career a tribute?
The reason I'm even talking about it is because, to me, it was a snowball effect of what would happen to him as, you know, Chris Jericho's career went on. There would be no Chris Jericho if it wasn't for this. He set the stage for what his character was in this push.
I agree with you.
And it established Chris Jericho as not just a pushover. He's a guy that could, he could win titles and, you know, he was savvy and he could get around things. And, you know, it established what Chris Jericho was. And Chris Jericho is still going today.
Yeah. And it made him a viable commodity that Vince wanted to pick up in 99 when he was done with WCW. And of course, we know what happened from there.
Welcome to Raw is Jericho!
However, I still don't know if you can compare that to Goldberg.
I don't think you can compare it to Goldberg. I'm just saying I think it's significant in as far as it's a push that, while on the surface at the time maybe seemed like, oh, they're just elevating Chris Jericho, I don't think people understood the longevity and the power that would have going forward.
I think that's a good suggestion.
Yeah.
I have one for you.
Sure.
Steve Austin, 96.
And that is a great push.
He was nothing. Let's be honest.
He was the ringmaster.
He was the ringmaster. We've talked about that and feuded with Savio Vega endlessly. Good feud, though. But it was a mid-card feud, and that's all it was going to be. He was saddled with a mid-card gimmick, you know?
Right.
And he had a mid-card manager, Ted DiBiase. Yes. And he was nothing. Now, winning the King of the Ring was great, and he did the Austin 316 promo.
Well, to me, that's the birth of the push.
It was.
It really is.
It
even
was.
Even though WWE revisionist likes to say, like, immediately it started rolling.
Right.
But it did start it.
It started it. It lied dormant for about 3 or 4 months. And then the Bret Hart feud, as I always talk about, one of the best things that they ever did. WWF, like one of the best feuds ever, right?
Right, and this was the push.
The push, and it was a great one because Austin was all over the television, but he was never, you never got sick of watching him. In fact, Quinn, you had this promo from, I guess, 97 that you were watching.
Yeah, I almost wish you could put it in right here.
I can't put it in right here, except I can do it right now.
He deserves an opportunity. He deserves to get his ass kicked. Mankind is a freak, and that's the bottom line. The fact of the matter is, I just soon let the WWF pick my partner because they screw me all the time anyway. It sucks. I don't really care who it is.
We've heard
and that's the bottom line. Shut up, Vince.
Now, wait a minute. You're not alive. You're just not alive.
It sucks. That's my favorite line.
Yeah. And this was the attitude of Austin, and this is the attitude of the WWF. He is the point at which the WWF changes as a whole.
Yes.
And it's all during his push. I would say his push lasted from that moment at the King of the Ring to WrestleMania 14.
100%.
That is the push.
He did no longer needed the push because he had ascended to where they intended him to be.
Right.
Right?
They started him from King of the Ring winner. And you knew they always wanted to make a King of the Ring winner the world champion. That was always kind of the flow of things, right?
And along
that time period.
And along the way, he won the tag in the IC.
Yep.
And he was one of the hottest names in wrestling. Finally beat Shawn Michaels for the title. That's the push.
What's interesting about his push, too, it was a push where he didn't need to always win.
No, he didn't.
That was what I liked about Austin, is they exemplified during the pushes, this guy doesn't care if he wins or he loses.
Yeah, he just wants to kick someone's ass.
Right. Oh, man, it's tough because I think that and Goldberg are on
they're
the same
neck and
level.
Neck. And
those are on the same level.
They might have to both go in, Quinn.
Mm.
I don't think we've mentioned anything better than Goldberg thus far, except maybe Austin.
There's one other.
Go ahead.
The Rock.
Yeah, I mean, that was born out of The Rock's natural charisma.
I mean, they took a mid-carder that everyone absolutely hated, and not because of kayfabe hated, because they just hated him.
They were just sick of
seeing
him.
It was X-Pac heat.
Yeah.
They didn't want to see him.
They just didn't want to see him.
They took a guy like that, and they gave him an attitude, kind of like they did with Austin.
Turned him heel.
They turned him heel. They give him an attitude, and that's the beginning of the push. He joins the Nation. That's where the push starts.
It is. Absolutely, it is.
And he rides that all the way to about Survivor Series 98, I want to say.
Yeah.
And I would say the peak of the push is where you could put The Rock in a main event against Austin at WrestleMania 15, like it or not.
Yeah, he lost.
Yeah, but it, you know, that was the initial push.
Plus, and the Mankind feud did a lot to help him,
right,
too.
And all that was during it.
And he looked strong during it, too. I mean, he lost, but he looked strong.
Right. But it established The Rock for all times.
Yeah.
And he's still a big deal when he comes in.
Now, are we at such an impasse here? And I don't want to make this decision yet, but I want to throw it out there. We're not an impasse, but have we come up with the final three already?
We may have.
Austin, Goldberg, and The Rock to join Hogan?
I will say one more.
Go ahead.
Bret Hart.
Which one?
The second one.
The world title push.
The one. Okay. Now, Bret Hart's a weird cat with all this.
Bret had a failed singles push in 89.
Okay, so, yes, and that might come up later. However, the Bret push from, it's tough to say where it began, because you could say it began with the Intercontinental title win against Mr. Perfect at SummerSlam.
Yeah, but you could also say it began with the loss of the IC title to Bulldog.
Right.
You know, that was where he gave up his mid-card push, and now, because that was the main event, first of all.
But if you think about it, okay, he's got a weird push, because it's like a double, you know, in a graph when it goes up and then it goes down.
Yeah,
and then
it's like
it
goes a double
up,
curve,
it's
right?
It's got a double curve, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. So it goes, I consider it all the same push.
Okay.
It goes up, and he wins the Intercontinental title against Mr. Perfect, culminates there, right?
Yep, sure.
Then he on that same up curve, he wins the world title from Ric Flair. You know,
okay, yeah.
You know, obviously he has to lose the Intercontinental
because,
you know, he needs to get there.
But a year
somehow.
Later, right? Yep.
Now he's going up again, right? And he beats Ric Flair,
yes,
for the world title.
Sum of the square roots of any two sides of an isosceles triangle is equal to the square root of the remaining side.
And all this time is establishing Bret as this is what he does in the ring,
sure,
all the time. He's the hardest working man in the business,
has
right?
Has a great match against Razor Ramon at Royal Rumble 93.
Mm-hmm. No, he doesn't. But anyway, so he loses the title to Yokozuna at WrestleMania 9. This is the down.
Oh yeah, that
it
was over.
Down curve,
that
right?
that was the end of his first main event push. It was.
No, but see, this is where I think we differ here.
You're gonna.
I consider it all part of the same thing, because he loses that fall.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't at a level yet,
yeah,
where he would be great.
No,
the comeback from the fall. Mm-hmm. In 93.
Getting the fan support.
I think the push peaks at WrestleMania 10. That's
absolutely
the push.
And that's a fantastic moment.
And that establishes Bret Hart for all time.
It does. However, when we're talking names like Austin, Goldberg, and The Rock, I don't know if he trumps any of those.
But was the push effective overall?
Yes.
That's,
it was.
That's the thing.
It was, you're right. But I would say it was as well for The Rock.
Right.
I would say it was for Austin. I would say it was for Goldberg.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Now, here's another one for you. I'll give you another one just to counter. Shawn Michaels.
Yes.
And with Michaels, I'm going to split this up, because
you think it's all part of one push, though?
Overall? I think that's more his career trajectory. Yeah. They noticeably started pushing him right before Rumble 95.
Right. That's really when it starts. He was always a mid-carder who was kind of annoying.
Correct.
Yeah.
So his push from the mid-card, IC title level at that point, right, is the highest he had been, to winning the Rumble, entering at number one.
Right.
He was all over TV. So it was a push, right?
Oh, he was definitely pushed.
Fighting Diesel for the world title. Shawn Michaels in a world title match at a WrestleMania. That had never happened.
Right.
And then that was able to enable him to be the Shawn Michaels that eventually beat Bret at WrestleMania 12, and that's where I'd say his main event push was fully sustained at that point. WrestleMania 12.
Yeah.
He made it. He beat Bret in a one-hour-plus match.
Right. By the time he was DX and all attitude,
he was already
established.
Exactly. So that's another one for consideration, but I think we need to start making some decisions here. Does anyone beat Austin or Goldberg so far?
I think Goldberg and Austin definitely go in. I think the last one's going to be the...
All right.
So, okay, Goldberg and Austin.
Goldberg and Austin, a double induction. right, Michael, we've got Hogan, we've got Austin, we've got Goldberg. We have to play the sound effect twice. It's the rules.
It is the rules.
Sorry. So we've got three. We're down to, we got The Rock in consideration. We've got Shawn Michaels in consideration.
And Bret
Hart, DDP still.
DDP,
Chris Jericho.
Yeah. Chris Jericho. Oh, man.
What about Booker T?
Booker T, yeah, from, Booker T.
From tag wrestler to
from
TV.
Nothing, basically.
Yeah, from nothing. From tag wrestler to TV champion. U.S., I believe. World.
Yes. Booker. He had everything.
Booker T.
Again, it didn't... Unfortunately, that push was wasted because of Triple H at WrestleMania 19, but...
Is Triple H in consideration? To be fair, it worked.
It did work.
I'm talking about his main event push now, in 99, 2000.
Here's where... I don't want to go too much into his push because I think his push has a lot to do with his position.
Yeah.
Dating the owner's daughter.
Sure.
I think that has a lot more to do with the sustaining of his push. He had a good push.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great push.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with the help of Foley, just like The Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. No, I agree with you.
What about Foley from kind of... big fat heel regular dude
to world champion? That's a good one too.
I don't know if it's as prominent or anything, but it's something.
I think we might have to go with,
yeah,
The Rock or Shawn.
You don't think it's Bret? I like Bret's push a lot, the way it played out. Shawn's was more immediate to me.
You like the slow burn on Bret's push?
I do like it a lot. I like I know it's not, we're not, the criteria wasn't like how the push went, but
no,
I really enjoy how that push went. With Shawn's, it was more like we knew it was coming. We were just, when is it going to be here? Like,
yeah, I don't know though. If we're talking about was it successful and all that, and The Rock is probably the clear contender for number four.
Right.
They saw something when he turned heel. They ran with it. He had a great program with Austin and then Shamrock, and then The Nation broke up. Then he had the DX feud, the Mankind feud, the Austin WrestleMania, 15 feud. He was The Rock by then. That made him The Rock, that run. And then he was able to turn face again and kind of be the face version of The Rock.
But that was already after establishment.
Correct. I think The Rock has to be number four, and I love Bret, and I like Shawn,
yeah.
But I mean... If we're talking about guys like DDP, I think The Rock's push is more important. If we're talking about Bret and Shawn, I think The Rock's push is more important.
Yeah.
He also went from nothing, like a crappy mid-card.
He was junk.
Bret and Shawn were at least respected mid-carders before they were main eventers.
Yeah. Although Bret's push was one of, like, the Goldberg push where it included, I think it's all in one.
I get
it's
it.
Go from nothing, tag to mid-card to world was all in one thing.
That's true.
Like, that's why...
Same thing with Shawn, though.
Yeah, but no, because Shawn, while he had his initial... they're two separate pushes from tag to mid.
Why are we always having to defend the other person's favorite wrestler?
I know, it's weird.
It's not on purpose, folks.
But it's okay.
Because I'm always defending Shawn, and you're always defending Bret. It should be the other way around.
I'm just saying, I think of all of them, I like Bret's push the most, and I think it does its job the best.
Well, I won't lose my smile over that.
Yeah. Part of The Rock's longevity is the movie star thing. It's not just the push.
Yeah.
And that to me...
Okay.
His push isn't as clean as the rest of them either. It's a lot of this Nation of Domination junk and like...
And you know what? To be fair, it was more based on promos than wrestling.
Yeah, it wasn't... Or his actions within the storyline.
Bret and Shawn's were both more wrestling-related.
Wrestling-related and...
Big stage, you know?
And the stage kept getting bigger.
Yeah, and not that The Rock didn't have great moments on the big
and
stage.
If I was to just compare between Bret and Shawn's... To me, again, Shawn's was more just... It was like we knew that main event push was coming.
True.
Bret's came at us all at once and in this slow burn, bell curve style thing. And it was just more interesting.
You don't have to convince me. Bret Hart for number four. So to recap for Donnie and the rest of you fans, we've got Hulk Hogan's WWF push, 84 to 87, we can call it.
Yeah.
We've got Austin's main event push, which was really 96. It started to
the
98.
King of the Ring, yeah.
Yep. To 98. Goldberg's just run, his one big run from late 97 until late 98.
Yeah.
And then Bret Hart, you're qualifying it as 91 to 94, basically,
yes.
Right? By 94, he was established as
right.
Bret Hart.
With the beginning being, I think when he was a mid-card, being Mr. Perfect is the beginning, actually,
fair enough.
Oddly enough.
But, I can't really argue with that. Folks, we want to know yours, of course. Let us know your four best and four worst pushes, in your opinion. You can do that by tweeting at us at OVP Podcast. You can email us or, of course, go to the Facebook group. And Quinn, since I started with one of the best, you get the pick for one of the worst.
And I was going to say, Joe, before we continue here, that I know we didn't mention The Undertaker or Kane
or something like that. You're right.
But at the same time, I personally feel those kind of those supernatural characters, like their character is the push. They're never not being pushed.
That's
like,
kind of you know true,
I mean?
Actually.
You know what I mean? Like
their character is a push.
Right. So you can't, you're a zombie. Like, I
okay.
mean,
fair enough.
Whatever. So like,
fair enough.
So if anyone gets mad at us, sorry.
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 You got one for the worst though, Michael?
Actually, I'll start with just because he's always on my table here. When I do the podcast, what about Kerry Von Erich in the WWF?
Yeah, that didn't really work.
Yes.
Honestly, they brought him in as a last-minute replacement for Brutus Beefcake.
Right.
For SummerSlam 90, and he beat Kurt Hennig, which I sucked. I hate that Hennig
had
to lose there.
That title change.
It was so junk.
And we all know why that happened.
Quinn, we don't have time for you to toe that line right now, okay?
Okay. Well, go listen to the old episodes,
yeah.
But whatever.
But I don't know. I mean, it wound up being it was pretty bad, actually.
Yeah, nothing. He's Kerry Von Erich. He was the NWA World Champion.
Yeah.
And they bring him in the WWF, and he's immediately the Intercontinental Champion. But sometimes pushing someone doesn't mean just give them everything immediately.
Oh, you mean like Roman Reigns?
Right.
Who, and, by the way, yes.
Yeah, we should address Roman Reigns real quickly here.
We are a retro wrestling podcast focusing mainly on the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. So before anyone writes in an angry letter or sends in a fax,
yeah,
Roman Reigns does not qualify for this because we are trying to be a retro wrestling
yes.
podcast.
I understand that he might be the worst push of all time.
Maybe.
It's possible,
but his career's
we'll have
not
to
over.
We'll have to check in like 5 or 10 years.
Exactly.
So.
And when we're still doing the show in 5 years.
When we do a Mount Rushmore Death Valley of Pushes, like version 2
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Then we can revisit Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
But, okay, yeah, Tornado was bad. I agree with you, but I have a really bad one that didn't work out the way they wanted it
sure.
to. Lex Luger, Made in the USA, 93.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
And that was junk.
And your t-shirts are too tight too, Billy!
They wanted him to be Hogan.
They wanted him to be the next Hogan.
And they tried almost a sort of similar push. It was like they incorporated parts of the later Hogan character, I'm Mr. USA.
Yeah, right, right.
Like, into a new Hogan.
It was weird because the fans wanted Bret Hart, who was Mr. Canada.
Right.
You know, and that was the main reason for that dip in his curve there that we were just talking about.
The bell curve.
Yeah, exactly. And the Luger thing didn't work out to the point where they had that split ending at Rumble 94 so the fans could kind of choose.
Yeah, and I mean, they were definitely going to push Luger until he spoke up in that dinner or whatever right before WrestleMania 10.
That's not what happened. That's not a true story. No, but I don't know. That one never worked, in my opinion. That was a push that did not go the way they wanted it to. Much like Kerry Von Erich, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have another one? We can get some floating around here.
Tatanka.
Your favorite.
Yeah.
You love Tatanka.
Oh, my goodness. That sucked. And they just kept trying.
So his face push, his heel push, which one?
All of it. They were always trying to push him. He was never anything.
He wasn't good.
Like, when they face pushed him, right? I didn't even feel like he was a good mid-carder.
He wasn't really. And remember, he had this undefeated streak from, like, the day he debuted until Ludwig Borga beat him?
Yeah. Who also, by the way, another
yeah.
shitty push.
Borga was bad. But you know what? Had he not gotten injured, it's hard to say how that would have gone.
I guess.
He can get a little bit of a slide, you know, maybe a little past there. But Tatanka.
Yeah, Tatanka is notable. Definitely.
See, the way they pushed him, you would think that he would have been world champion.
I mean, when I used to watch the old tapes, I would wonder, like, why he was just a jabroni in the Million Dollar Corporation
right.
when I first started watching.
Yeah. And then his heel push was, we've talked about that in our very first episode even, his heel push was terrible.
Yeah.
He went from actually being, like, at least, like, a popular mid-carder to a junky-ass, unmotivated, like, low-carder.
Yeah.
That didn't work.
What about The Big Show?
Yeah, but I would say from day one.
Well, I'm not talking the Giant, because that was fine.
Oh, no, no.
WCW.
WWF from day one.
Yeah.
Well, maybe from day two. Day one was he came through the cage and...
St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
And that was fine. The problem was, instead of building to a big match between these two, he fights Awesome on, like, Raw a few
He was
weeks
always
later.
On the sidelines. Another thing with him is, and I always say this, they never did it right. He is... huge.
Yeah.
He is bigger than everyone in this company.
Yes.
He should never lose, ever, unless it's like Austin or something.
Right,
like,
and that's what they could have built to.
You know what the problem is with a guy like that?
Mm-hmm.
If you immediately launch him to face Austin,
yep,
there's nothing like, where can he go from there?
No, I agree.
His push is dead in the water.
I agree. You know, I think he has to go on.
Yeah.
Because I think he was mishandled from day one, and I know they tried several times to rebuild his credibility and all that, but along the way, he turned face and heel so many damn times. He was crying all
and
the time.
And that's more in the recent past of
Diapers,
the Big Show.
Diapers, I know.
Diapers and all this. But,
but they fucked him up.
The initial run, the initial,
99.
It set the stage for, you know, Big Show comes, growls, snarls, loses, and then leaves.
And then the weird thing is, somehow, as a face, he's world champion by the end of the year. No business being so.
Well, it's because they're trying to recover their losses.
Yeah, they
and
fucked up.
It's
and
all
they knew they fucked up.
Yeah, and they knew they fucked up. It's all screwy, and screw that push, because that should be like, it should be easy.
Do you want it to die, die, die?
Yes, die, die, die.
Die, die, die.
Big Show for number one.
What about Rick Rude in the WWF, like, going from mid-carder to, like, main eventer?
Beautiful, yes. Because the only flash of brilliance that we even got to see of that was against Snuka at WrestleMania 6. After that, they fucked it up. That he should have been so much more.
He was a slam dunk, if you ask me. He could talk. He had the look.
He could wrestle.
He could wrestle.
Tough guy in real life. And WCW, in 91 and 92, proved that.
Yes.
They proved that this
they
guy...
They took him in, and he was awesome.
He was a property. You
yeah.
know, this was someone tangible that you could put...
You could build the company around
him. Could build a company around him. Dangerous Alliance built around him. Great world champion over there.
Right.
Hell yeah. Rick
yeah.
Rude was so screwed up in that world title push.
Immediately, he's fighting the Warrior. Well, not immediately, but, you know, soon they say, okay. And they had the best thing, too, because he had beaten the Warrior
yes.
the year before.
Right.
And that was his push, is to say, I beat the Warrior before, I'm going to beat him again.
Yeah.
And he just goes and looks like an idiot.
He did. He looked like an idiot. Somehow he slipped through and left. You
yeah,
know?
We forgot about the Warrior in the other thing.
Yeah.
But I again, the Warrior, no.
He
wouldn't have made
any
it anyway.
Before,
but,
no.
but for Rick Rude now.
Rude's a good one, actually. Yeah.
They effed up. You got another one?
I'm still hung up on Tatanka here. I thought you brought up a great one with Tatanka.
Tatanka, huh?
You know what? Another push that really sucked and did not work. Billy Gunn, singles wrestler, 1999.
Yes.
Remember
actually,
that?
I think that might be worse because I feel Billy Gunn was earmarked to be like a main eventer for a long time.
Oh, God,
time.
Yeah. Like, since 97, maybe?
Yeah.
After the Smoking Gun split, you could tell they wanted to do something with him.
Right, they always wanted to do something with
he
him.
He fell ass backwards into a great tag team, right?
Yeah.
But they always had their eye on breaking up the Outlaws. This is probably Russo, but I'm not sure. And turning him into, like, the next Shawn Michaels or something.
Yeah, I mean, he's, to me, you know who's the modern-day equivalent? Dolph Ziggler is like him.
Yes.
That's another failed push, by the way.
Yeah, a little too new.
It is a long time ago, though.
You're right.
Now,
you're right. He's still active, though, so
yeah.
It's hard. I don't like putting
I know,
active
but
guys
I mean,
on there.
I think we're at the point with Ziggler where we know it's not going to work out.
It's not. But
yeah.
Billy Gunn, though, Quinn, they tried so hard. He wins the King of the Ring in 99. He gets the Ass Man
yeah, he
music.
He gets the King of the Ring thing,
yes.
Like, which is usually the sign.
Uh-huh. And then he is in a big feud with The Rock at SummerSlam 99.
God, I barely remember that.
It sucked because Billy Gunn couldn't hang in the main event stage. And then, of course, he goes back to the New Age Outlaws, but they try to reboot another singles push with the one Billy Gunn in 2000.
Yeah, where he had sitcom music.
That song's awesome. Yeah. You're probably hearing it right now as we talk. I think Billy Gunn's 99 and 2000 singles pushes are horrible, misguided, weren't going to work, didn't work. What do you think?
I think it's notable enough to put on there.
I think we can put them on there.
Yeah.
You want to?
Yeah.
So Billy Gunn for number two.
Yeah, that one's
really bad.
Yeah.
So, all right, we got Billy Gunn, we got Big Show, both from 99, coincidentally. What else we got? I'm still hung up on Tatanka, I'm just saying.
What about the first Bret Hart push?
wait, 89?
Yes.
That? You mean, okay, what Quinn's talking about, folks. And this is weird.
This is to me, the definition of a failed push.
In 89, sometime after WrestleMania 5, it wasn't evident if you just watch the pay-per-views in 89.
Yeah, you're not, if you just watch, like, on the network, the pay-per-views, you're not really going to know.
But on the TV and in the magazine, the Hart Foundation split up, like, not with any fight, like they were both face.
Yeah, on good terms or whatever.
Good terms, and they're like, we're gonna both be singles wrestlers. And that was like, that's where you get all those matches of like Bret Hart fighting Dino Bravo and stuff in 89. And
I'm gonna say he fought Bad News Brown.
88 he did.
Okay.
That was that one-off feud that they had.
That's probably the genesis of
the singles push, right. But he had some good matches with Kurt Hennig, and he had some good matches with Rick Martel during that period of time, and Ted DiBiase.
Right.
But what the hell happened? All of a sudden, the Hart Foundation is back together by 90.
Yeah, it's really weird.
They're like, oh, no, we're a tag team again. We want the titles.
Yeah.
That's like what happened. Like, what?
To me, that's literally like, you can't define it any better than that. Yeah. It's just terrible.
I know, but I don't know. Bret rebounded, so it's like,
I get that he rebounded, but ignore that. Say he didn't. Yeah. Say they just put him. That's awful.
Then he's Billy Gunn.
He's Billy Gunn. It's a bad push.
That was a bad push. That wasn't because of him, though. I think that was because of them.
No, and not all the best pushes or worst pushes are because of the wrestler. It's
true.
The company.
It's the company, but you have to, generally, you would hope there has to be a certain amount of talent that goes along with your push, you know?
I guess.
Generally. Which leads me back to Tatanka. You brought him up, man, but I can't let go of this. He was so bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's amongst the worst. So what about King Mabel as a main eventer?
That
95
now,
that's worse.
That is bad,
right? Because no one wanted that.
No one wanted it, and no one still wanted it when it was happening. So it just didn't happen.
It was awful.
Like, every step of the way, nobody wanted it.
No one wanted it ever. Yeah. And it was like a good 6 months, starting with the King of the Ring, obviously, but really right before that, when Men on a Mission turned heel. Mm-hmm. Got rid of Oscar, and thankfully Mo stopped wrestling, because Mo is the least important wrestler ever.
Of all time.
Like, possibly. Literally of all time.
If there was a Mount Rushmore of importance, and, he would be on the Death Valley.
Yeah, exactly. So there was that. But Mabel winning King of the Ring, no one liked it, right?
Yeah.
Mabel fighting Diesel for the world title? Just Mabel. Why?
Yeah.
What do you think about that? I mean, is that worse than Tatanka?
It's bad, but you know what's another bad one?
What?
And you just mentioned it.
What?
Big Daddy Cool Diesel.
Yeah.
From mid-carder to face, that's the world champion. Why?
That was another case. You said it a little bit earlier. Like, you don't have to give everyone everything all at once.
He was hot.
And then literally...
Not saying he wasn't deserving of the push.
No. He was popular, right? He was
However,
hot.
That didn't work out, did it?
No, it didn't. To the point where even by mid-95, people were sick of it.
Yeah.
And it didn't help that he was fighting guys like Sid and Mabel. And
to me, that's another criteria of bad pushes, is if people are sick of it, like, while it's happening.
Yeah.
While the push is going on.
Yeah. And Diesel was one of those.
That's a symptom.
It was a symptom. And that was another case of them trying to build another Hogan.
Yeah.
And that worked out. Ultimately, I would say, worse than Lex Luger, because he won the world title.
Yeah.
At least Luger didn't.
Right, and Luger was able to recover in WCW.
Correct, and Nash was too, but...
He was never world champion again because people were behind it. Let's put it that way.
Fair. The thing about Diesel, though, is he was a champion for a year.
Yes.
And it was bad, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
The only good moments of it was when he fought Shawn Michaels or Bret Hart.
Right.
And that should tell you something. Mm-hmm. He tanked. He was bad. I didn't like it. Most people didn't like it. Vince liked it. That's probably about it.
It's a monumental screw up. And it's also like, I think when people do compare the Roman Reigns push nowadays, they compare it to Big Daddy Cool.
You want to put him on as number 3?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
Die.
I think it's a perfectly acceptable criteria there. Now, what about, this is not a main event push.
Okay.
But it's still one that, and I've brought him up before, Hardcore Holly from like a jobber.
I don't know.
From a jobber to that.
I just never got that the intent was there with him.
I just feel like
they were looking for something to do with him. That's not the same.
He was all over for a while, though, but okay. All right.
You know what I mean? Like, though,
yeah,
with
I
that,
get it,
like,
I get it.
It's just.
I understand.
It's not
understand.
The same.
Fine. I'm not going to
push.
I'm not going to argue that hard for it. You have any other ones?
I don't know. Tatanka's looking mighty fine.
Yeah,
right now.
I think so.
That was a definite push.
And the main reason I'm so caught up on him is because of a few things. An undefeated streak, which one of our Rushmore guys had, right?
Goldberg, yes.
The fact that he was all over WWF TV, including pay-per-views, from 92 until 95, 96. Mm-hmm. The fact that he had two pushes, one as a face, one as a heel. And amidst all of this, the dude never won a title, and he never ascended to where you can tell they always wanted him to be. They always wanted him to be a world title guy. You can tell.
I'll throw one for consideration here.
Okay.
The initial Sid push from in 95 when they brought him back. They bring him in as the bodyguard, and they want him to be the big... He's going to be the big top heel for a while. Like, I could tell they wanted him to be for, like, a long standing. It wasn't just, like, a one-off of Big Daddy Cool. Like,
he left, you know, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the worst period of Sid's career, I think.
Yeah.
That was the worst version of Sid.
It was the first time they tried anybody, even WCW didn't do it yet, try to make him a main eventer.
Yeah, he really... Well, he fought Hogan, Quinn, WrestleMania 8. That was a one-off, though,
To me, he was in the... I know we say big fat heel all the time, but he wasn't fat, but he was a big heel.
He was just a big dumb heel.
Yeah, it was just somebody. It's like when Hogan fought Bundy at WrestleMania 2.
Right.
It's just like he existed.
Yeah,
like,
you're right. That's not the same. That's fair. I think Tatanka's worse. Tatanka was sustained crap his entire run.
Yeah. And we briefly brought up Borga, right? Because I always thought they wanted to do something with him. But
yeah, but it's hard to say what would have happened. I mean, it was successful. He was a heel.
Right.
This building is crumbling like America is crumbling.
He was a big heel. He was feared and he was treated with respect in kayfabe, you know? Tough to beat. Tatanka sucked.
Yeah, Tatanka. Okay, just put Tatanka in.
Let's just put Tatanka in for number four.
Die, die, die.
So that is our Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of pushes. And of course, we want to hear yours. You can do that by tweeting at us at OVP Podcast. You can email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. And you can tell us all the people we forgot on our Facebook group, right, Quinn?
Oh, yeah. That's where they all pile up over there.
Yes.
So
we are going to take one more break. But when we come back, we are reviewing a promotion for the first time. Back after this.
Finally, the 1999 King of the Ring and the world's greatest athlete has come here tonight to talk about ass.
Imagine that.
Let's hear it. He's an authority on it.
And one in particular. Because at SummerSlam, it's Mr. Ass, the premier, the primo, the perfect ass versus the people's ass.
Now it is time for everyone to see the truth, that you are ass.
Hey, it's Sean Mooney. I may no longer be in the event center, but if I was, I'd be talking about our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. All right, boys, let's get to it.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Thank you so much for being with us as we romp through the world of retro wrestling. Quinn, we are reviewing something.
Yes, we are.
And this was requested by you again, Quinn. we keep taking requests.
Sorry, everyone. I'm hogging up the requests.
That's fine. We've never done this before, and that's why I agreed to it immediately. It is World Class Championship Wrestling from December 10th, 1982. A little word on World Class. It was, at this time that we're reviewing, an NWA affiliate. It went independent a few years later and closed down in 1990. It had been open since the 60s, 66, I think.
Very old promotion.
Very old promotion by a very old man, Fritz Von Erich, the Von Erich family patriarch, if you will.
Which, of course, we'll see in this show.
Oh, he'll be all over it because the Von Erich's got to be. You know what I mean? He's basically the Stu Hart of Texas, if you want to think about
That's unfortunate.
It's wonderful. And his promotion had some really good periods of time, and this show is not evident of any of them, really. And there's also a great DVD out with the history of it called the story of World Class. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good DVD. It's the World Class Championship Wrestling DVD. Just get it if you haven't seen it. It's actually on the network, the documentary portion.
And so, it's worth it.
Yeah, it's a very good watch.
Yep. But where we are here is, of course, in Texas, in Dallas, and that's where most of their shows took place. And we are in 1982, December. We are on the cusp of a very important feud that hasn't happened yet, and we'll get to that. that.
Yes, it is probably what launched World Class in this time period.
Yes, and turned him into High Class for a little while. So they had some successes and some failures, and eventually went under in 90 and kind of led to the genesis of the USWA, the Memphis territory.
I would say the over-reliance on a half-footed man didn't really help them.
Whew, I don't know who you're talking about. So... So we open with Quinn, as you called it, the classic intro.
Yeah, that like burr, 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 that music, and Travis is probably going to get so mad.
Yeah, because he doesn't like when we imitate that, but oh yeah. Well. And we're hosted by their classic host, Bill Mercer, and he's pretty good. And we start right away with a King Kong Bundy promo in his dapper light blue polo, Quinn.
Yes, a very dapper King Kong. It's weird how they present King Kong Bundy in this promotion.
Yes, it is.
He's kind of a loudmouth, sort of chicken shit heel.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. And he's still King Kong Bundy. He's already lost his hair by then, you know?
Yeah, he's just, he looks like Bundy.
Yep.
I mean, there's nothing really else to say. It's King Kong, it's the King Kong Bundy that we would know and love in WWF.
Dressed very nicely, and he makes fun of Kevin Von Erich, not Kerry, Kevin Von Erich, and he calls him a scrawny punk. They have some feud over Von Erich's American title. But let's go to the sport auditorium for our opening contest, and we open with the spoiler, who was like 42 years old here.
I don't have a problem with him.
Versus Quinn's favorite Jose Lothario.
Joe, he is already old here. I mean,
he's like 50.
He could be 60 here for all I know. He's ridiculous.
Now, apparently, spoiler, recently broke away from Gary Hart due to the Kabuki situation.
Would you say that's a spoiler alert?
Our ring announcer and his horrible coat tell us all that these matches are sanctioned by the National Wrestling Alliance.
Thanks.
All matches sanctioned by the National Wrestling Alliance.
You'll like this, though, everyone, especially you, Quinn. Jose is the Mexican Brass Knuckles champion.
He didn't have a belt. I wouldn't know. Does he didn't even have brass knucks. Just signing autographs before it. And by the way, what is this, like, politics with the NWA and the Kabuki situation? Like, what is somebody running for office here? Like, what is going on?
And Quinn, you also called Jose the Mexican oldest shit champion.
Yeah, that's appropriate because he is so old here.
You said to me, Quinn, that referee here, David Manning, looks like he belongs selling audio equipment somewhere.
Yeah, like he looks like he should be selling like a boombox or something.
And Radio Shack.
Yeah, like Radio Shack in the 70s.
So we open this match with a lot of generic chopping and punching by both men.
And it stinks, honestly. The whole thing stinks. Jose Lothario stinks, and it's kind of a miracle that Shawn Michaels was any good being trained by this old fart. And by the way, I looked him up, and apparently Jose Lothario is famous, according to his wiki page, for losing 500 matches in a row.
That's awesome.
At one point in his career.
That is so freaking fitting for the legacy of this guy.
How did he train anyone of worth?
He was the super sock.
He couldn't win a match.
Now, I do need to ask everyone out there, maybe one of you guys out there knows the answer, maybe Marty Howell or somebody, what exactly did the spoiler spoil? Like, did he run around going, telling people the end of movies?
Maybe he, like, always jumped into matches and, like, interfered.
Ah,
he spoiled
them.
He
spoiled them. Very
or
good.
Or he's a spoiler in the sense that a guy who's a real winner, who needs to win a match to get a title shot, he spoils it.
Or there's just no thought behind the name.
No.
Could be that, too.
There's probably nothing.
Bill Mercer mentioned something about the Oriental style.
Yeah, we get into a lot of this. There's some kind of all-Asian championship later.
What the fuck?
Their attitude towards the Orient, as they would call it.
Yeah, the Orient.
Yeah, is very interesting. Let's put it that way.
You know what's not interesting in this match? This is crap. Honestly, it's two flabby guys boxing.
Anytime Jose Lothario is involved in anything, you know it's going to suck.
I'm not surprised. We get an exciting bear hug by the spoiler. And Quinn, you asked me, is this the worst match we've ever seen?
Yeah, so I meant in all that we've reviewed.
Yes.
I'm sure I've seen worse matches in my life.
Oh, yeah.
But this is probably one of the worst matches we ever reviewed. This is like...
This is awful.
This might be below a half star.
Seriously. This might be minus 5 stars. Mm. Spoiler then switches to a side headlock. And you said to me, Quinn, it looks like Jose is using Spoiler's chest as a pillow.
Well, he's got to get some sleep, man. I mean, he is an old man. He belongs in a rocking chair.
With Vern.
Yeah.
By the way, the Spoiler looks like an idiot. I'm just going to say, he has like this gold mask and crappy black and red tights. He looks like a jobber that would get squashed by like Dino Bravo or somebody.
I will say this.
What?
He looks in decent shape, though. I'll give him credit. He doesn't look 44 or however old he is here.
He's the youngster of this match, yeah.
No,
which
but
is
he
telling
looks,
you something.
But I mean, even when he was standing amongst others, he looked kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't want to crap on him too much.
Fine, but speaking of crapping on people, Jose Lothario makes a comeback with punches and some like leg grab. Like he kept like grabbing his leg.
He didn't do anything.
It was nothing. And then there's,
he did nothing.
There's nothing. And then this is the worst. There's more punching and they're both fighting on the apron, on the outside of the ropes, like standing on the apron.
At this point, I say to you, why would he even be in the industry if he sucks this bad?
It's a very fair question. And as we ponder that question, we get a horrible back body drop by Lothario.
That the spoiler does all the work.
Yeah. And apparently they were both counted out of the ring while on the apron.
Why? Why did this happen? Like, why was this on this show?
I don't know.
It upsets me,
this was
Joe.
Awful. We opened the show with a double countout on the apron in 6 minutes and 19 seconds, by the way.
I understand. Mm-hmm. It's 1982. And if you go over to our YouTube page, you can see us reviewing 1982 WWF,
yes,
right?
Yes, you can. Yep.
And this looks better than that.
Oh, yeah.
On, like, from a visual standpoint.
Absolutely.
But from a wrestling standpoint, it's similar and or worse.
Yeah, no, this was like a slap fight at Del Boca Vista.
Yes.
This reminds me of the Seinfeld episode The Pen, where Jack Klompas and Morty start going at it.
Yeah.
You broke my dental plate. Doris, you broke my dental plate. You son of a pen.
It was
brutal.
It was brutal.
Yeah. It was awful.
So then we cut to Bill Mercer, and he's with that same referee, David Manning, talking about how we're going to have a special referee for an upcoming Kerry Von Erich Ric Flair match. Remember, NWA affiliate here, so Ric Flair's there.
I'm surprised David Manning didn't try to sell him a pair of headphones or something.
Well, it's not like Von Erich could really go running.
Oh.
So he rambles on, and he also has really bad hair, David Manning. One of our roommates walked by and is like, look at that hair.
They literally, they were just like passing by.
Like in the kitchen.
In the kitchen, they're like, oh man, that guy has horrible hair. And then they just left.
Yeah. Not even related to what, like, didn't care what we were watching, just noticed the hair. So anyway, long story short hair, Michael Hayes.
Long story short hair, did you just say that?
Michael Hayes is gonna be the ref for this special ref thing. Now this was funny because Manning is rambling on, and he finally says, yeah, it's gonna be Michael Hayes. So then right after that, Bill Mercer is like, so who's the ref gonna be?
And at this time, Michael Hayes, by a large majority.
Michael Hayes.
He will be the other referee. There's gonna be a winner that night, and we're trying to take all precautions to not let what's happened in the past happen again.
Can you tell us who's won?
Yes, Michael Hayes has won. He will be in the ring with either myself or Bronco.
He literally just said.
It was really weird.
Like 2 seconds before he asked.
It was like he wasn't paying attention
or
something.
Sometimes I don't hear things, right?
I know.
And sometimes I may ask something after it. However, this has been edited for television.
Yes.
At least I hope it has been.
Yeah, this is not live.
What? Why? How would no one notice that?
He's literally like, yeah, so we decided Michael Hayes is going to be the ref, and Bill Mercer's like, oh, that's good. So who's the ref going to be?
Yeah.
Like, what?
It was unbelievable.
What are you talking about? Yeah, but, you know, it doesn't seem like anything fishy would happen there, right, Quinn? With Michael Hayes as the ref?
No, and Michael Hayes with the with the Von Erichs.
No, nothing weird is going to happen there.
Okay, we're just being sarcastic, and I just want to reiterate this for people who
are not familiar.
Basically, the Freebirds were not really a thing yet.
No.
And this was how Michael Hayes was brought in, and he was brought in as a face.
Mm-hmm.
And what would happen here, essentially, is Michael Hayes was to turn heel on Kerry Von Erich in this match and start the Freebirds and boot up WCCW into what it became.
The Freebirds versus Von Erich's feud was the defining feud of world class in much the same way that the Midnights and the Rock and Roll Express were the defining feud of the mid-late 80s NWA.
If anything, for WCCW, it was just as powerful as a singles feud like Hulk Hogan versus Andre or Austin versus The Rock or Macho Man versus Hogan. Something like that. Like it was like the Hatfields and the McCoys.
There you go. It was the Jets and the Sharks.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the Shawns and the Bretts.
Yeah.
So anyway, this other referee, Bronco Lubrick or Lubick or whatever I've heard of him.
That's a mouthful, right?
Yeah, I know. He wanders in to say that he's a great ref and he wants to see a title change, and they both pick Kerry to win.
Yeah.
Quinn, you had a big problem with two referees picking the winner of a match.
I said to you, this is garbage. They're refs. They're supposed to be impartial.
I know. And they're like, no, we want Kerry to win. What the fuck?
Why would anyone hire you?
I don't know.
At least Michael Hayes has the decency to not go, like, announce,
yeah,
I want Kerry Von Erich to win.
Yeah.
So no wonder he got away with this bullcrap.
Because he was smart about
it.
Now, we cut to Gary Hart, you know, famous manager of World Class, great manager, big fan of his.
Yeah.
He's got a stable of real assholes here, and they are the great Kabuki, who's probably about 91 years old at this point, Magic Dragon, not to be confused
with Puff, right?
With Puff the Magic Dragon.
Yeah.
It can't be.
We didn't even have that joke noted.
It's not even in the notes, I swear.
Quinn and I were just in the same mind frame there. And this is the best guy, the third guy here. Checkmate.
What is he, related to Bobby Fischer?
What is he, a chess piece?
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the best part of the whole promo here, is King Kong Bundy storms in with the spoiler.
And they're heels, too.
Yes.
They storm in on the other heels.
They storm in on the other heels with the spoiler and Wild Bill Irwin, better known, Quinn, in WWF.
The Goon.
As the Goon.
Yeah.
But he's much more relevant here in World Class.
He's much more cowboy-y, too.
Yes. I love Bundy, for the record, and I love the spoiler wearing his sport jacket.
A spoiler sport jacket.
Very, very.
I like the sound of that.
We need to have the OVP spoiler sport jacket, which, by the way,
it just says spoiler on it.
Yeah, just a spoiler. You can get our OVP t-shirt at teespring.com.
Oh, I don't think that was mentioned today, was it?
That is teespring.com/OVP podcast.
Cheap pop.
And then you noted to be Quinn. They cut away really weirdly, like it's WrestleMania 3.
Yeah, so Gary Hart like just goes, I'm going to be sweet and sexy or whatever the hell he says, right? And it just like cuts away. And like there's like a cut like that at WrestleMania 3 that's very notable to me. I don't remember the exact promo, do you?
I think it's most of the promos. One of them is the Bobby Heenan, Moolah, and Harley Race one.
Yeah.
Where it just cuts away weirdly.
Like after they say some terrible catchphrase.
Yeah.
Like it's like that. It's really weird.
There's one where Johnny V says something like da, 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 and then it cuts away. I don't know. Anyway, we have a great match here. It is Al Madrid, Bugsy McGraw, and Brian Adidas, a.k.a. Brian Adidas, a.k.a. Brian Adidas.
A.k.a. Brian, I'm not wearing my Adidas.
Yes.
Adidas.
And they talk about how they're going to be the best six-man team. And I need to mention here, Bugsy McGraw, who I had never heard of, forgive me, apparently he was a territory guy. He's amazing. He's got this aviator cap on.
Yeah.
And he's got Adidas pants.
Right. So this is confusing because I'm not as familiar with World Class as I don't know if you are, Joe.
Little bit.
But I was confused if Brian Adidas, I'm serious. Like,
yeah,
I thought.
This is real.
Because, okay, so first of all, they've been saying his name like three different ways. So, and I think we've addressed this before, possibly, about how everyone calls this guy a different thing.
Yes.
And I just, in my head, he's Brian Adidas, like
right.
The pants, Adidas pants, or shoes or whatever.
Yeah.
And so Bugsy McGraw is wearing Adidas pants. I literally wasn't sure. If he was like, I was like, oh, is that Brian Adidas?
It's
He's
not.
Wearing Adidas.
No, Brian Adidas is rather nondescript, as we'll see in a bit. But anyway, great promo by Bugsy, and they're fighting, these three are fighting Kabuki, Puff the Magic Dragon, and Checkmate.
Yes, the guys that we just heard from.
Yes, exactly. So Kabuki sprays his green mist because isn't he like Great Muda's dad or something?
Yeah, and I ask you, why was this fat slob ever over? He looks like shit.
He does. Kabuki just is like paunchy and doughy and flabby. Like he looks like an aging like lead guitarist for a bad metal band.
Yes, he does. That's a good description, Joe.
Thank you. I just thought of that. So anyway, we start in Adidas here with a dropkick and some arm work. Kabuki flips away from that as Quinn notes the excellent production values.
Okay, I want to pull away for a second. The production, if you compare it, you can watch our YouTube reviews of 82, like I mentioned before, WWF.
Yep.
You
yep.
compare that production value, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can find a lot of World Class on YouTube as well. And just if you just want a side-by-side comparison.
Yeah, this is excellent.
It's like night and day. The lighting's good. The ring looks official.
Yeah. It's well-produced.
It cuts away to different like promos, like in a nice studio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nice for 1982.
Mm-hmm.
It looks clear.
Yep.
It's not fuzzy.
Absolutely.
Everything is good. They had satellite hookups, like everything about that is great. However, the wrestling stinks. It's
absolutely
awful.
Right. Yep.
So I understand that people look back at this and they say it was influential for its production values. It was.
It definitely
there was.
There was
nothing like this.
Yeah,
nothing
this
at all.
Great.
But the wrestling is lousy.
This taste of it is a bitter pill to swallow. Let me put it that way. This is not fun. Bill Mercer, though, is great.
Yes.
Great announcer. Bill,
yeah, great.
You know how
fantastic. I don't have a bad thing to say about him.
Turning with Chris Lock. Trying to spin it, but look at Kabuki. Oh, what moves he makes.
You know how we were bitching about Sue Play last week?
Yeah.
By himself, not
right.
Very good. Bill Mercer, great by himself.
Yes, and I know we got on him for mixing that thing up before, but I mean, for the most part, he's really good.
As a play-by-play guy,
yeah.
He's great. He's fun to listen to. He's been good. So anyway, Puff the Magic Dragon tags in, and he sucks worse than Kabuki somehow. Al Madrill comes in, and he's actually pretty good. And Quinn, you said it's because he's the only one not punching all the time.
Right. I mean, wow, what a change, right?
Right.
No punching all
no
of the
No punching.
Yeah.
So here comes Bugsy. I love this guy already. I can see why people like this guy, Bugsy McGraw.
He's fun.
He was fun.
You know, he reminds me of the Boogie Woogie Man.
Jimmy Valiant.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fair. I was going to say
a little
Ivan Putski, too, not in terms of physique, but in terms of, like, appeal.
He's got the stance of the Boogie Woogie, though, that I look like I'm taking a dump while I'm walking stance. Yeah.
You're right. So Brian Adidas comes in and, of course, slows things down with a headlock.
Yeah.
You said, Quinn, it's like a menagerie of crap wrestling.
Yeah, it's a potpourri, if you will.
Potpourri
of poop. Anybody you tag in, it's junk.
Now, we clip to some guy yelling, get him, very happily.
And this is another thing with the production.
Yep.
They do a good thing here is this wrestling is awful.
Yes.
Okay, I saw how I said that?
Yes.
But you wouldn't know it by the way they clip to the fans flipping out. And they're actually chanting for the wrestlers in the ring, too. It's not like this is just they're using, like, stock footage. No, it's like, go get him Adidas pants or whatever. Like, you know, like, like you actually see them. And, like, women are, like, going nuts and all this stuff.
No, it's you're absolutely right. That's not an exaggeration. Checkmate comes in and he's got a tiger mask on.
I don't understand. We should have noted that before. He has literally the tiger mask.
Yeah, I don't know what's going
on. Like, why is he called Checkmate?
I don't know.
And they note that he's a European champion, so he's European? I don't know. He's probably from Arizona or something. honestly, this is so weird because he's a Japanese, but he's European champ.
And he's probably American.
And
wasn't Bulldog the first European champion anyway?
Yeah, this is also confusing to me because there's only one European champion that I know of.
Yeah, British Bulldog.
Well, there was other X-Pac
he was the first.
And stuff, but he was the first. Yeah, not in 82. We're just kidding, folks. Don't get mad.
Yeah, don't worry. Big Pier 6 brawl and Adidas goes down to a boot by Kabuki. Checkmate comes back in and does nothing. Just standing around, just slapping at him, swatting at him. It's just awful.
And at least the crowd's eating it up because we
aren't. I don't know how. Yeah. And he tags out to Kabuki. Bugsy comes back in and slugs away, but he gets caught in the heel corner punching. It's tonight's theme.
Yep.
Quinn, you noted that not only did it enhance, you know, the feel of the match,
right,
but the crowd reaction shots a bit ahead of their time.
I don't, you know, you'd only see this in between matches on other programs.
Yeah.
This is like during the match, like they'll do a move,
yeah,
and then they'll clip to the audience reacting to it.
It's like Kevin Dunn was watching this.
Yeah.
A young bucky-toothed Kevin Dunn was I'm going to do this one day. Give us a little patience. This is what we have to work with.
We're dealing with this. So
the crowd is making it seem better, though. It's not. Here's the thing. It's not horrible in a sense, but there's only so much punching you can watch six guys do.
And, you know, we always talk about how work rate isn't like the number one thing.
It's not.
But like, this is excessive. Like, this is over the line with the punching.
And,
like,
and it's long.
Yeah, it's like, I like wrestling to tell a story in the ring, but like this isn't this is just punch. It's like a slap fight. Like,
it really
it's
is
nothing.
It's just not. It's not really gelling. You know what I mean? They're not doing anything wrong. They're not botching stuff.
Yeah,
it's just boring. Even though the crowd's into it, it's boring.
Right.
Oh, and there's judo chops too.
They finally mixed it up. It's judo chops instead of slap chops or whatever.
And the
or
big
pork chops. Yeah.
The big high spot, and we're not kidding, was a sunset flip by Adidas. Seriously.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And I hate his name because it seems like he should be better than that.
What do you mean by that?
Because with Adidas, it's like, I don't know, he sounds like a superstar. Like
Brian Adidas, right?
Yeah. I will say this, he did do the only different move in this match, so he is the superstar technically. But we'll get to better people in this.
Oh, there's better people.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Kabuki nails Adidas in the face with his knee, like
this,
a jumping knee.
I actually really like this. So the way this plays out is like, Adidas is getting like mauled by the mauler. It's not when the NWO came.
It's by Magic Dragon.
Yeah, by Magic Dragon. So Magic Dragon is kind of just wrestling him, like doing the typical slap chop bullshit. Yeah. And then like just randomly from like the outside the frame, like Kabuki just like knees him in the face from the top rope and it like knocks him out.
And he gets a win.
Yeah.
And basically I think Kabuki was like, I've had enough of this shit. You know, like I'm ending this match. Quinn, you had a problem, by the way, with Bronco's ref counting style the whole match.
Yeah. So this guy is like the daintiest counter I've ever seen. So what he does is he gets on his like just his knees, but he's still like standing up. Like he's like up on his knees and he puts his hand, like he bends it like in like a L shape.
Yeah.
And then like
it's kind of like he's bending over to pet a ferret.
Yeah. You know? It's like he's petting something.
At his niece's house.
You probably didn't even hear me counting just now because I was doing dainty. The petting. Yeah. I was trying to be dainty like he was.
Back to Bill Mercer, who throws to Fritz in one studio and Ric Flair in another with a satellite hookup. And they're going to be talking about this alleged bounty, Quinn, that Flair put on Kerry Von Erich.
Right. So there is a bounty.
Allegedly.
I mean, I doubt that's real. I'm just saying.
Flair denies the whole thing and says that he's the world champion. He's wealthy. He wears the best clothes. He dates the most beautiful women.
I will never admit to this. I'm the world heavyweight champion. I'm one of the wealthiest athletes alive. I wear the finest clothes, date the most beautiful women, driving the biggest cars, and I'm the toughest piece of work in pro wrestling.
Basically, fuck you, Fritz.
I love this. This is the best part of
the show.
Yeah.
Fritz, then, from the other studio, says that Flair is a moron and that his son, Kerry, should be the champion. Now, Flair says, hey, assuming I even paid this bounty, which I didn't, you know, I had a good reason to. Fritz calls him a moron again and says he would choke him out if they were in the same studio.
They're really taking advantage of this satellite, as they call it.
Right.
Here.
So Flair starts to get really worked up into the yelling mode. And in the meantime, Fritz says this whole thing is asinine and that his son, Kerry, is going to win.
Why is he going to win just because it's an asinine feud? Like, I don't really get that.
I don't know. But in the meantime, Flair is yelling. He's like, I don't mind bleeding. He's going to stay champ.
Right. He's,
woo.
He's basically saying he doesn't mind getting dirty to defend his livelihood, as he calls it.
Yep. The title, his livelihood. He's going to win.
Yeah.
Awesome segment.
It was good. It was a very simple thing, but it was effective. It did what it needed to do.
Split screen interview, also very ahead of its time. WWF would do those about 10 years later.
In the mid-90s, I feel like.
You know,
honestly,
face-to-face interviews they used to do. This was awesome. So our main event, a main event of a one-hour show.
Yes, and they call it that,
they
too.
They do, yeah.
We forgot to mention at the beginning, they gave us the card, as they called
did.
It.
Yes, they ran down the entire card.
Yeah.
Nicely done. The main event, Quinn, is the American champion, Kevin Von Erich, against King Kong Bundy, non-title
match.
You called Kevin Von Erich the Huck Finn of wrestling.
Yeah, so he comes in here, he's got no shoes on.
Yeah.
He looks like a man kid. Like, not a man child.
Right.
He's more of a kid.
Bill Mercer says that Kevin Von Erich wrestles barefoot because it feels better. Kerry Von Erich wrestles one foot.
Because it feels better for him, I guess. They're throwing it in my face at this point. Like, this is like...
Yeah, the jokes were flowing,
this
folks.
This is ridiculous. It's like, his brother literally has half a foot, and he's out there wrestling barefoot. And I understand that the foot got cut off later because of drugs or something.
No, he got in the motorcycle accident.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me.
No,
that was another thing.
What drug is there that you take where you have to cut your foot off because of it?
Tenactin? I don't know.
Whew. Okay, so Bundy has white boots on, oddly enough.
Yeah,
you didn't like that.
There's so much footwear problems here. Like,
yeah, I know. Maybe David, I need a haircut. Manning should be working at Foot Locker.
He could have with his garb.
I know.
It did look. Didn't it look like he was wearing?
Yes.
Now that you bring that up, I'm like thinking about it, and he definitely looked like an employee at Foot Locker
in the 70s, though, not even the 80s.
Exactly.
So they fight over a wrist lock. This is the big main event,
Quinn. This is the big one, boy. Non-title big one.
Bill Mercer actually says it's the pride of who is stronger on the wrist lock.
Yeah.
And then Bundy breaks out.
And a battle right now for the pride of who is stronger on the wrist lock.
And I say, no shit, he's Big Bong Bundy, King Kong Bundy.
Of course he's going to break out.
Excuse me, folks, King Kong Bundy, he's bigger, so yes. Why wouldn't he break out?
I don't know. Big knee and chops and punches by Kevin, and this is where I notice, Quinn, Bundy's not treated like a monster here. He's just used the avalanche as a transitional move, mm-hmm. and Kevin, like, almost no-sold it. Like, he quickly took control again. It's just very interesting because Bundy in the WWF,
yeah.
right, was portrayed as a monster. His avalanche killed people, right?
Yes.
He broke Hogan's ribs. He was a main eventer. Here, he's trading wrist locks and doing rest holds and, like, wrestling with Kevin Von Erich. And Kevin Von Erich might be around the same height, but he's not the same weight as Bundy. And I have to say, it is quite ironic that in the scope of the Von Erich family, that it was Kevin Von Erich, of all people, to come up a foot short in his career.
It's amazing.
So Bundy gets some punches and a double chin lock, which Kevin reverses and puts a claw on him.
Here we go, the claw.
What, do they all know it? That's
yeah,
what you were saying.
It annoys me. Even Lacey knows it.
Oh,
yeah.
Lacey. So King Kong Jobber here bails to the outside as Mercer name drops Hiro Matsuda for some
yeah,
godforsaken
out of
reason.
Nowhere. Oh, Hiro Matsuda. I'm like, what, that guy in the Four Horsemen that sucked?
Crowd chants, "We want the claw."
I can't even believe they're chanting that because that move sucks.
No one wants the claw.
No one ever wants the claw.
Mercer's just rambling on about anything but this match. This is not good. Bundy catches him in a big bear hug, and Mercer says, "A bear hug by the bald one."
That I like that line,
that was
actually.
Funny.
They do have a lot of women in the audience, I'll say that.
You're
because
right.
You can tell, like, we didn't say this, but Kevin Von Erich is in really good shape.
He is.
And I was thinking this afterwards. I mean, do you think, like, I've heard it said on the DVD that the Von Erichs were pushed because of their looks, partially. Not just because of the family thing. Obviously the family thing, but...
No, but they were like teen heartthrobs in
yeah,
a way.
Yeah, so they clearly were bringing the women in because there was a lot of women in this crowd, like, mm-hmm. more so than usual in a wrestling crowd.
Absolutely right. 100% right.
And
younger
young,
women.
Young women. Not,
teens, 20s,
yeah,
you know?
We're not talking about stunt grannies or anything here.
Or that lady in the blue dress at WrestleMania that cries
yeah.
or whatever.
Well, she was a bit middle-aged.
So we get a chin lock now by Bundy. What is this? A 1993 Shawn Michaels
Bundy
match?
Bundy is the Shawn Michaels of WCCW here.
So the crowd cheers on Kevin as Bundy is visually calling spots in this chin lock.
Did see? I didn't really notice that.
Yeah. And you said this match sucks too.
Yeah.
It's
the main event. It's not very good.
Nothing's really been that good wrestling-wise. So the ref gets bumped over the ropes with this awesome sell, like this melodramatic sell by David Manning. And then Bundy tosses Kevin over the top rope to the outside, which is illegal in NWA rules, but the ref didn't see it.
Here we go with this.
You love these rules.
I hate this because he tosses him over the rope, right? And
mm-hmm.
and get to the ending here. Like,
okay,
I'll explain the whole thing.
So then he brings him in, Bundy does, with a vertical suplex play, and he gets a three count.
Right. Okay. So here's the deal. So he throws him over the rope, right?
Yes.
I can get why that's illegal. That makes sense.
To the outside, onto the cement.
Right. But they're acting like him suplexing him over the top rope was also, like, wrong or
Which
something.
I don't think it is, right?
I don't think it is either. But here's the deal. Even if he suplexed him in the ring, he would have cleared that rope. So why is this dangerous?
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
He didn't hurt him any more by suplexing him into the ring.
Which also makes you wonder, why is the over-the-top rope even a thing anyway? If you hip-toss somebody, they go higher than that rope. It's so low!
That's a very fair point. I don't know what the NWA board of directors, you know, why they had that rule.
What was that guy's name? Dan Kazuzuki?
Dennis Coraluzzo, yeah.
Dennis, yeah, whatever.
Dan Kazuzuki.
Yeah.
You got it right. He was hanging out with Hiro Matsuda.
Well, the All-Asian Championship and
yes.
all that. So.
So Bundy gets a three count with that, but shouldn't that be a five count?
Well, I don't think he was doing that here, but...
Should have been. Regardless, Bundy wins, and he says he's the true champion. So Bill Mercer recaps tonight's card, says Bundy stole his victory. Come on,
dude. I
like
the recap, by the way.
I did, too. It was
no,
like,
I am a fan of that.
It's like every week when our friend Donnie, when we see him, he recaps our episode from the day.
Right.
To us.
Yes.
As if we don't know what we talked about.
Donnie is the Bill Mercer of OVP Podcast.
Next week, Quinn, David Von Erich is going to face the All-Asian Heavyweight Champion, the great Kabuki.
Yeah, and I apologize, everyone. I was the spoiler.
Yes.
When I just mentioned the All-Asian heavyweight title.
David Von Erich is going to fight the great Kabuki for the All-Asian heavyweight championship.
Kevin just lost.
Kevin lost. But this is nepotism. Why are all the Von Erichs always getting the title shots?
Yeah.
Come on.
I don't know. They're champions or...
It's not fair. And this is nepotism.
And is King Kong Bundy now like number one contender? He probably isn't because he's not King Kong Von Erich, so he's probably got to earn that.
We roll credits, literally.
Yes, like long credits, too.
Long credits.
And they do something cool here, by the way, just to mention.
Mm-hmm.
They like do this like inverted color thing.
Yeah.
Like for the credits of like the matches that happened.
Yeah, it was fine. It was a little ahead of its time.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yep. Overall, that wasn't good.
No, it wasn't.
I'm sorry, it wasn't.
And I understand that we're kind of reviewing this before it got hot.
Right.
But nothing was really going on here.
No.
Other than the improved production quality.
Absolutely. And I think we would both agree that the best part of the show, naturally, was Ric Flair.
Yes.
It was nice to see Ric Flair. He really brought a shot of vitality to this.
Yeah, he did what the traveling world champion should do.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought, like you said, vitality to a promotion that's mm-hmm. a little stagnant.
Yep.
Albeit making it strides in a business aspect with the production.
Hell yeah.
But he injected a little livelihood. And I mean, that's what Michael Hayes was really brought in to do.
And
ultimately, to camp out there and stay there and mm-hmm. do that. And he did.
And you know that I have my misgivings about him in general, but I'll tell you what. Michael Hayes and the Freebirds was the best thing to happen to this promotion.
Yeah.
Because there's only so far you could ride the coattails of every single fucking Von Erich.
And the Kabukis.
Without having a good counterpoint. And the Freebirds were that counterpoint. Unfortunately, this episode was right before that time, so we didn't quite get a taste of the good world class.
We weren't sure the date of that.
No, we just picked this kind of randomly.
Yeah, we just kind of picked randomly, but you know, it was fun to peek into to see what world class was before.
Absolutely.
Even though it was by accident, but still was interesting.
Yeah, it was worth a shot. It wasn't bad at all. And folks, as always, we appreciate you giving us a shot.
Yeah.
We love talking to you about the world of retro wrestling, and we want to talk to you more about it. So be sure to tune in next week. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a review, Quinn.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
You just go on there and hit the review button.
That's right. We would love that.
Type it in there.
Follow us on Twitter at OVP Podcast. We want to keep getting your suggestions, so you can email them to us or you can go to our Facebook group, check out the spreadsheet, and let us know what you want us to talk about. We'll be happy to do it.
Yeah, we love the suggestions. And as you can see from this show, we get a lot of ideas from them.
We do, and we would love to continue to get some ideas from you. So in the meantime, folks, have a good rest of your day. Have a good rest of your week, and we will see you next week for episode number 44. So long, everybody.
See ya.
Fritz, what's your response to that now? In there somewhere was an answer, but I'm not sure exactly what he said, except he would not admit it.
Bill, I've always had trouble responding to morons in the first place. This guy doesn't make any sense at all. He's only defending himself for an action that he knows that took place. There's no question about that. This proof would stand up in any court in the United States, and it certainly did stand up with the National Wrestling Alliance. This man represents the belt of the National Wrestling Alliance, which is the largest wrestling organization in the world, by far the biggest. He is the symbol carrier. This man wears the belt and says, I'm the best in professional wrestling. When my son, Kerry, should be the world champion right now, there's no question about it. Kerry Von Erich will soon have him back in this ring, and with the stipulations right now that have been added as a result of the proven conspiracy of Ric Flair, should be, very shortly, the new World Heavyweight Champion.